Well, we know what Parshas Korach is about. It's about Korach. Because the Parsha begins in a very enigmatic way. Because the opening words are Vayikach Korach, as we know, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehas, Ben Levi, V'dosim V'aviram B'nei Eliyah, V'onim Pelis B'nei Reuven. What's noteworthy about how the Parsha begins is that it's full of subjects and has no object. That is to say, the Pasuk says Vayikach Korach, it doesn't tell us what he took. Instead, it tells us other people, Dasan and Aviram, and Ben Peles. What did he take? Doesn't say. And that is why many Mefarshim comment, and Rashi is among them, that actually the object is mentioned in the Pasuk. It's Korach. That is to say, Vayikach Korach is a highly compacted way of expressing the fact that Korach did the taking and Korach was the taken. So Vayikach Korach, who took? Korach. And what did he take? Korach. Vayikach Korach. But what does that mean? What does the Pasuk mean when it says that he took Korach? Where did he take himself? And here, Rashi comments. Lokach es atzmo. He took himself. Litzad echad. To the side. To one side. Lihios nechlak bitocha edo. To be separated from the congregation. Leorer al hakahuna. In order to raise, cause trouble with regards to the kahuna. So if we wish to know what is the meaning of Vayikach Korach, Korach means he took himself to the side in order to segregate himself from the congregation and start a machlokas. Now, what's interesting is, as much as the matter has been resolved, shall we say, grammatically, but now, conceptually, what does that mean? It sounds like the long and short of it is that Korach made a machlokas. But Rashi took a very roundabout way of getting us to that point. Because Vayikach Korach means he took himself to the side, he's separate from the Eidah, he wants to cause trouble. We could translate that into three words, Korach made a machlokas. So what do we gain by having this somewhat more elongated expression of how the machlokas began? Now, we do note, of course, the Pasuk gives us, in a sense, Korach's full credentials, his full background. He is Korach, he's Ben Yitzhar, he's Ben Kehas, Ben Levi. That's tracing him back three generations. Now, a great deal is made of the fact that the Pasuk doesn't trace him back further. To quote the classic Israeli expression, Im Kvar, Az Kvar, if you're already telling me how far he goes back, so keep going until further notice. Who was Levi's father? Yaakov. No, the Pasuk doesn't trace him back that far. That would be considered excessive. The question is, why does the Pasuk trace him back this far? If you tell me that Korach is Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehas, so maybe I haven't heard too much from Yitzhar recently, but I know who Kehas is. I know Kehas is one of the sons of Levi. Do I need to be told that Kehas is Ben Levi? I don't think so, but the Pasuk says it. But no further. So what's interesting is, while many Mefarshim are wondering how come the Pasuk didn't trace him back even further, we could by the same token ask, why did the Pasuk trace him back this far? Let it state, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehas. But it stops specifically at Levi, no sooner and no later. Now with regards to the fact that Yaakov is, by this stage, conspicuously absent from the Pasuk. It stopped before Yaakov. Rashi comments, and Rashi sources the Talmud and Masechah Sanhedrin and Daf Kuf Tes. And it's a fascinating idea that the absence of Yaakov is actually at Yaakov's behest. Yaakov seeks to be deleted from the list here, from the presentation of the Yichus of Korach. And that he registered in the brachas to, well, the joint bracha to Shimon and Levi, where he says, Besodom al tavo nafshi, bikahalam al techad kavodi. So, Besodom al tavo nafshi, I don't wish to have any part in their Sodom. And that the question is, what exactly is Sodom? Is it the episode with Zimri, who was from the tribe of Shimon? But the second part of the pasuk, bikahalam, in their congregation, al techad kavodi, let my soul not be connected with that. And how is bikahalam related to the episode of Korach? Because the verb that really brought everyone together is, in the next pasuk, pardon me, pasuk gimel, vayikahalu al Moshe al Aharon. They congregated. And Yaakov says, I do not wish to be part of that congregation. I do not wish to be mentioned in connection with that congregation. Bikahalam al techad kavodi. So that's very interesting, because Yaakov apparently has some inkling that there is this force within Levi that could have a negative outcome, and he's already distancing himself from it. But if we wish to get the full picture of that pasuk, so let us remember that the pasuk in the brachos of Besodom al tavo nafshi has four parts to it. Number one, Besodom al tavo nafshi. Number two, Bikahalam al techad kavodi, which is Yaakov distancing himself from the act of Zimri and the act of Korah. But then the pasuk goes on to have two additional parts. Ki ba'apam hargu ish, for in their fury they killed people, that's the reference to Shechem. Uvirtzonam ikru shor, and through their will they tried to uproot Shor. Shor is Yosef. Bechor Sharo, Hadar Lo. And therefore, if we have those four parts of the pasuk in front of us, it's clear that they have a relationship to each other, because if you put the word ki in a sentence, you are connecting thematically those two things. I do not wish for A to happen because of B. And therefore, Yaakov says, I do not wish for it to be connected to these two things because of those two things. And specifically, they will match up. The first of the future episodes is because of the first of the past, and the second of the future is because of the second of the past. And specifically with reference to Korach, therefore, part four of the pasuk lines up with part two. When Yaakov says, Bikahalam al techad kavodi, which is the second thing he wishes to disavow himself from, it's because of the second thing that happened, Uvirtzonam ikru shor, which is a reference to Mechiras Yosef. And our question will be, Ma inyan Korach, Eitzel Mechiras Yosef. How are the two in any way connected, that one is an explanation of the other, that Yaakov will say, because of what happened with Yosef, I wish to have no part in Korach. The two have no connection, seemingly, one to the other. But Yaakov does connect them. That needs to be understood. Now, with regards to the people that made up the Adas Korach. Who are they? Well, Pasuk Beis tells us, Vayakumu l'bnei Moshe, va'anashim mi b'nei Yisrael. People from b'nei Yisrael, the Pasuk doesn't really say from where in b'nei Yisrael. We don't know. Apparently, all over. Some say there were many from Shevet Reuven, others say were the Bechorim. The Pasuk itself gives us their credentials, Nisiei Eda, Kiriyei Moed, Anshei Shen. But in terms of which Shevet they came from specifically, it's non-denominational. And the reason why that's important is because if we now take a look at how Moshe responds to them, so we will see that his initial response is comprised of two parts. He first responds rather briefly to one group, and then more at length to another group. Who are those two groups? Well, Pasuk Hei states, Vayidaber al Korach. Moshe says to Korach, Ve'el kol adoso lemor, Boker v'yoda Hashem es ashelo, v'sakodosh v'ekriv elav. In the morning Hashem will make known who it is that he has chosen. Pasuk Zayin, Pasuk Vavin, Pasuk Zayin, take the machtos, take the fire pans, put keteris in them, and whoever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants will remain standing by the end of tomorrow. And that's that. But Moshe hasn't finished. Because the next four psukim are addressed to a specific group of people that we were not aware presented themselves as a group of people. Namely, Shevet Levi. Vayomer Moshe el Korach, Shimonah b'nei Levi. He starts to remonstrate with the tribe of Levi. Hama'at mikem ki evdil elokei Yisrael eschem adas Yisrael. Is it not enough? Hashem has separated you. Lakriv eschem elav lavodis avodis hamishkan. Vikashtem gam kehuna. So from Pasuk Ches to Pasuk Yud Aleph, Moshe is talking at length with Shevet Levi and telling them that they have asked for too much. And our question is, we were not aware that Shevet Levi as a group were asking for anything. You have Anashim Ibnei Yisrael. If you tell me that there were Levim amongst them, I can accept that, because all tribes presumably were represented. So how is it that Moshe ends up saying twice as much to Levi as a faction than he does to the entire group? He seems to make rather short shrift of the first group. He almost dismisses them in a sense. Because they say, we want the Avoda. And Moshe says, if you want it, come tomorrow and get it. And not really much to talk about. He doesn't try and dissuade them. He doesn't try and chastise them. He says, if you ask for it, you'll get it. And see? Some people would take that as a dismissal. But when it comes to Levi, who never really spoke up, as we said, as a group, Moshe begins to talk with them at length about this. And moreover, even when he's talking to Bnei Yisrael in Pasuk Zayin, Usanu bahem esh, visim walein keteres lefnei Hashem machar, take the fire pans, put the keteres, vayaha isha sheyivchar Hashem hu hakadosh, rav lachem bnei Levi. Even when he's talking to everyone, he's talking to Levi. Even Pasuk Zayin ends rav lachem bnei Levi, and that's before he even started talking to Levi. So how do Levi emerge as, in a sense, the ones to speak to here? Whereas everyone else are just the ones to send home. Well, what is Korach's claim in the simplest understanding? At the very least, what he claims that he is claiming. What he claims that he wants. Well, ki kol ha'elo kudum kadoshim, as the Mefarshim explain, why should the Avoda be limited to the Kohanim? After all, everyone's holy. Everyone should be able to have a shot at the Avoda. Or at the very least, one could say that the Avoda used to be spread around much more equally amongst Bnei Yisrael. Every family had a representative in the Avoda. It was the Bechor. And that's why many say that the 250 men were comprised of Bechorim. Give the Avoda back to the Jewish people. That's their claim. Like it was. Now, seemingly, that isn't a particularly strong claim, for the simple reason that things aren't like what they were. The Avoda originally rested with the Bechorim, but then the Jewish people made a terrible mistake called the Chet HaEgel. And as a result of that, they fell and the Avoda was removed from them. So things have changed. So how can the Jewish people say, ignore the fact that we lost the Avoda and we want to have it back? You lost it. Why are you making as if that never happened? Says the Chidah in the Sefer Rosh Yosef, it's true. This claim that the Avoda really belongs with the Jewish people, it's not a particularly strong claim, it's not a valid claim. It used to belong to the Jewish people until the Jewish people sinned at the Egel. However, not all the Jewish people sinned at the Egel. Notably, Shevet Levi did not. And therefore, Vayasfor lav kol b'nei Levi, mila shem elai. So that's an interesting question. Because if you belong to the Jewish people at large, you don't really have a leg to stand on, because the Jewish people were involved in the Egel, the other Shvatim, and they lost the Avoda, so how can you claim it back? But if you're from Levi, and Levi were never involved in the Egel, so essentially what Levi could say is perhaps the Egel happened, but it didn't happen to us. we weren't involved in the Egel. And in a sense, Korach has 2 points to his advantage now. On the one hand, Korach is a Bechor. And therefore, naturally, the Avoda accrues to the Bechor. But should you say that the Bechorim lost the Avoda, so Korach will counter, well, Levi was not involved, and therefore, at the very least, the Bechor from Levi, and perhaps even the entire tribe of Levi, should not be affected by something that they were not involved in. So this is very interesting, because half of Korach's claim falls away rapidly, but the other half remains. But the question is, therefore, so what is everybody doing with Korach? But here we understand, as many Mefarshim point out, in order to stand up to Moshe, in order to force some type of confrontation, Korach needs a party. He needs numbers. He needs a platform. At the very least, in order to open up the topic. Therefore, Korach assembles people from all over. All of the Bechorim, and whoever else wants. Nesi'e Eda, and he says, he's a people's man. He is for the Jewish people. Give the Avoda back to Bnei Yisrael. He knows that there isn't really much of a chance of that happening at all. But in terms of the numbers that give him his power, they're a launch for Korach. And this is one of the very upsetting aspects of the Machlokas of Korach, is that his interests were ultimately at odds, not only with Moshe Rabbeinu, but even really with people in his own group. And that is why the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, which contrasts Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim with Machlokas Shelo L'Shem Shamayim, for the sake of heaven, not for the sake of heaven, when it presents the classic Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim, the people mentioned are Zo Machlokas Hillel V'Shamay. When Hillel and Shammai argued, it was L'Shem Shamayim. All of their arguments only brought them closer together. That's a Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim. Sofa L'Hiskayim, it leads to people being more established one with the other. And what is a Machlokas Shelo L'Shem Shamayim? Not for the sake of heaven. Says the Mishnah, Zo Machlokas Korach V'Chol Adoso. The classic example of such a Machlokas is Korach and his people. And the Mefarshim asks, there seems to be a deviation from the symmetry. When it came to Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim, we mentioned both sides, Hillel and Shammai. Therefore, when you come to talk about Machlokas Shelo L'Shem Shamayim, so that variable has changed, but keep the two sides. It should have said, Zo Machlokas Korach V'Moshe. But the point is, as the Malbim explains, that a trademark of Machlokas Shelo L'Shem Shamayim is that there exists Machlokas even within the very same side. Ultimately, there's a Machlokas going on between Korach and the rest of his Eda. He needs them for a while. He'll discard them when they've outlived their usefulness. And that is classic Machlokas Shelo L'Shem Shamayim. They're brought together under a very flimsy front in order to empower each other. But when everybody else has been removed from the equation, they'll get to work on each other. Now, Moshe instantly sees that the only group of people that have any form of credible claim are Shevet Levi. And that is why he deals so abruptly and in a sense so dismissively with the people at large. You want the Avoda? Come back tomorrow. There's nothing really to talk about. But when it comes to Levi, who are the ones who, if you look, in a sense, thematically at what's being said, you'll see that Levi do seem to have a point. The point needs to be addressed. And that is why Moshe proceeds to do so. And what is the answer? Why is it that if Levi were not involved in the Egel, that they should need to pay the price, so to speak, for the Egel? The answer is very simple. Shevet Levi are a tribe within the Jewish people. If the Jewish people have taken a fall, which they did, and Shevet Levi are part of that people, they cannot continue through life as if nothing happened, saying nothing happened to us as a group. Because you're part of a larger group, the weather has changed for the Jewish people, and if you're part of that people, it changed for you as well. You cannot claim the Avoda without essentially seceding from the Jewish people. And that's unacceptable. And what's interesting is, this, I believe, will explain to us a nuance within the Pasuk. For in Pasuk Tes, Moshe says, talking now to Bnei Levi, Hama'at mikem, is it little for you, ki hivdil elokei Yisrael eschem mi'adas Yisrael, that Hashem has already separated you to a degree, you are given some credit, la'kriv eschem elav, la'vodus ha'vodus mishkan Hashem, it's not as if nothing has happened, but you are separated, v'la'mod l'fnei ha'ida l'shar sam. What's noteworthy within Pasuk Tes is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been mentioned a number of times in the Pasuk. Beginning with Pasuk Gimel. Ki kol ha'edav kulam kadoshim, ubesocham Hashem, yud ke vavke, as to be expected. And Moshe responds, in kind, Pasuk Hey, boker v'yoda Hashem, es ha'shalom. And so it continues. When it comes to Pasuk Tes, the name of Yud Kevavke is not mentioned, but rather the Pasuk says, Hadma'at mikem ki yivdil Elokei Yisrael eschem. Why is there a shift in referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu between the Shem Havaya, Yud Kevavke, which has been used until now and will be used subsequent to this point, and there seems to be a break here, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is referred to as Elokei Yisrael? I believe that the answer to this question, in a sense, corroborates everything that the Chida is saying. For what's interesting is, one of the hallmarks of the name Yisrael, normally we contrast Yisrael with Yaakov, the higher level and the lower level, and there's much to talk about that, but the Akedas Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Aramor, in Parshas Vayigash, explains that the name Yisrael is exclusively a reference to the Jewish people as made up of 12 Shvatim. The Jewish people comprised of 12 Shvatim, they are called Yisrael. And interestingly, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu changes Yaakov's name to Yisrael, that is when he tells him that his final children will be born. Goy ukal goyim yetzu mimecha. That is exactly the time that he calls him Yisrael, because then you'll be able to be called Yisrael. And this explains to us, says the Akedas Yitzchak, a number of psukim elsewhere in the Nach. We know that Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel, a famous confrontation between the Eliyahu and the Nevi Habal. So many details are described. It's in Sefer Malachim Aleph, Perik Yud Ches. And in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, as a prelude to Eliyahu's korban, or to offer for the fire to come down on his korban, the Pasuk states, Vayikach Eliyahu, shtei mesri avonim. He took 12 stones. Kemispar shivtei b'nei Yaakov. The number of shvatim of the sons of Yaakov. Asher hayod devar Hashem elav leimor Yisrael yiyeh shemecha. That is a very specific reference. And it seems to be bringing up aspects of history that are not germane to this confrontation. Whether Hashem called him Yaakov or called him Yisrael, the bottom line is, half the people are involved in Avodah Zorah, and Eliyahu is trying to do something about it, and what difference does it make if Hashem called Yaakov Yisrael, and what's it got to do with the number of stones? Ektet Hezakedas Yitzchak, Eliyahu here is working to preserve the integrity and the cohesion of the entire Jewish people. As we know, for a long time, Jewish people were split in half. In the south, you had Malchus Yehuda. In the north, you had Malchus Yisrael. And Malchus Yisrael were most of the tribes. And they're involved in Baal worship. And had Eliyahu not taken action, or perhaps he could have felt that he doesn't need to take action, because if those other tribes, if they are lost from the Jewish people, so be it. After all, we're okay in the south. Yehuda's okay. The Jews are okay. Binyamin's okay. And so is Shevet Levi. two or three out of 12. You take what you can get. But Eliyahu, he went to war in order to reclaim all of those other tribes. And the reason why is because without them, there is no Yisrael. And that's why the Pasuk underscores the fact that there were 12 of them, and Yaakov was called Yisrael. The Pasuk refers to this at that point because that is the meaning of Yaakov being called Yisrael, specifically the nation made up of those tribes. And moreover, elsewhere, in Shoftim, in Perikath Aleph, where you have the tragic episode of Pelegish Begiva, whereby Shevet Binyamin was almost wiped out. There were just a few hundred of them left. And the Jewish people stopped themselves just before they completely wiped out Binyamin. And they said, Vayivku Bechi Godol. They cried, Vayomu Lama Hashem Elokei Yisrael Haisa Zosbi Yisrael Lipaket Hayom Mi Yisrael Shevet Echad. How can it be from such a thing from the God of Israel to remove from the people of Israel one Shevet? The word Yisrael is mentioned three times in that rather short pasuk. And the point is because there would be no Yisrael had they wiped out Shevet Binyamin. And that's why, interestingly, at the time of the Chet HaEgel, when Moshe himself invokes Zechus Avos, it's the laning for Tanis Tzibor, Vayechal Moshe, and as he refers to the Avos, he says, Zachor l'Avraham l'Yitzchak u'li Yisrael avadecha. Not Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, Avraham Yitzchak v'Yisrael. Why does he mention Yaakov as Yisrael? Well, as we know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu offered him, so to speak, whatever was the nature of the offer, that he would destroy the rest of the Jewish people and begin again from Moshe. Now, Moshe is saying, but remember Schus Avos, don't they deserve that their descendants should have a kiyum? Well, Moshe is also descended from the Avos, and therefore if the Jewish people begin again from Moshe, then it can be Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and their lineage will continue through Moshe. And that's why Moshe doesn't say, remember Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. He says, remember Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yisrael. Because I'm descended from the Avos, but I'm not 12 tribes. They're 12 tribes. And that he was thus invoking the value of the full status of Bnei Yisrael, the full profile, which is made up specifically of the Yud Beis Shvatim, each one with its unique contribution and its unique identity. And Acharei HaDvarim Ha'ele, I think we understand why in Pasuk Tes, Moshe refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Elokei Yisrael, because he is addressing the fact that if Levi are not careful, they are in danger of removing themselves from the rest of the Jewish people. If they wash their hands of everything that happened to the Jewish people and continue as if nothing happened to them, they are not part of the Jewish people. And Moshe says, Elokei Yisrael is not prepared for you to be that separated. You've got certain credit, and you are the ones who are the auxiliary support for the Mishkan, but for you to carry the Avoda as a tribe means that you're not part of the Jewish people. And if you're not part of the Jewish people, then Hashem for you is not Elokei Yisrael. And he's not prepared to have you without them or them without you. Therefore, there has to be yet a cohesion. The Egel happened to you as well. Korach, however, clearly doesn't mind. He doesn't consider it to be a great loss if Shevet Levi would somehow remove themselves from the rest of the Jewish people. On the contrary, the rest of the Jewish people, they did the Egel, they were involved in the Egel, we're Shevet Levi, we kept ourselves intact, they're holding us back, and maybe we don't need them. And in a sense, this perspective, I believe, is summed up in the first two words of Parshas Korach, Vayikach Korach. Rashi explained that Vayikach Korach, not only Korach did the taking, but Korach was the taken. In Rashi's words, Lokach es atmu letzad echad, he took himself to one side, lios nechlak min ha'eda, to be distinct from the rest of the community, le'orer ala kahuna. And our question was, well, what are you saying? Essentially, you're saying that he caused a machlokus. Why such a roundabout way of saying it? But the germ of the machlokus, right, the roots of the machlokus, was that Korach was prepared to take himself to one side, as if to say he doesn't see himself as part of the rest of the Eidah, and that is his platform for demanding the kahuna. Vayikach Korach. But ultimately, Korach is part of the Jewish people, and so are Shevet Levi. Now, the question is, have we ever seen something like this before? Such a radical idea that perhaps you have a number of groups, a number of entities, and some of them aren't making the grade, and one of them will pull away. This seems like the first time everyone spoke about anything like that. But actually, if we go back to Parshas Vayeshev, And we see the way the brothers reacted to Yosef. And they were looking to kill him. Plain and simple. But why? I mean, he got the kasonas pasim. Okay. There's not such good feeling. But to kill him, that's a drastic step. How could they react so extremely? And Mefarshim explained, it begins with the Rokeach, one of the Rishonim, that the brothers very simply saw Yosef as a Rodef. That is to say, they saw Yosef's slandering them and Yosef's criticisms of them towards Yaakov as a way of removing them from the future of the Jewish people. And what's interesting is, for us, looking back, we understand that the contribution of what Yaakov introduced into the Jewish people is that once you're Jewish, you stay Jewish. That was the chiddush of Yaakov's children. No one beforehand had anything like that. The first of the Avos, Avram, not all of his children continued the line of Avram. Most of them didn't. Yitzchak did. Everybody else didn't make the grade, fell by the way. And the same is with Yitzchak. And he has two sons, and one of them made it, and one of them didn't. And now it's Yaakov. And Yaakov has 12 sons. And based on the track record from before, and the law of statistics, says that they're not all going to make it. And perhaps only one of them will. They're not yet aware that the climate has changed in that way. That they're all in. They didn't feel that they were all in. And they thought that Yosef was looking to push them out. And if that's the case, then their entire spiritual future is at stake and is looking to be terminated by Yosef, Habala Hargacha, Hashkem Bahargo. If he's looking to remove you from the ultimate future of the Jewish people, he needs to be dealt with accordingly. Ad kedei kach. Now, what's interesting is, one of those who reacted most extremely against Yosef was Levi. Vayomu ish elachiv hinei ba'al ha'chalom asal ha'zeba. Levi was one of those who was behind the extreme action taken against Yosef. But what justified such extreme action? The fact that look what Yosef is trying to do. He's trying to leave us behind and pull ahead and we'll be nowhere and he'll be somewhere. He'll be the future. We're not prepared for that. But in the fullness of time, that is what Korach himself is looking to do. To pull ahead. He is looking to take Shevet Levi away from the Jewish people. And Levi was specifically those that opposed in such strident form what they perceived as Yosef's attempt to do the same. And this, I believe, is the biur in the Gemara, which says that when Yaakov said, Bekahala matechat kavodi, he wishes to have no part in what happens with Kahal of Korach, and he explains, and the explanation that correlates to his distancing himself from Korach is Bertzonum ikru shor, because of look at what they did to Yosef. And we asked, well, how are these two things connected? Why are you distancing yourself from Korach based on what they did to Yosef? But in terms of our discussion this evening, we understand it's the same concern. And therefore, what Yaakov is saying is, especially in light of what you did to Yosef when you thought he was looking to pull away, so certainly, Bekal Anatecha Kavodi, the refutation of such a move of what happens in Korach has already existed in the reaction of the brothers to Yosef. The Gemara tells us, it's a well-known section of the Gemara, and I think it will take on a new light. In Bava Basra, where Rabbi Bar Chana, the famous travels of Rabbi Bar Chana in the fifth parak of Asfina, Dafayin Gimel, Dafayin Dalet, he went everywhere and saw everything, and at one point he says that there was an Arab tour guide, Hahutaya, who said, if you wish to see where those who were involved with Korach are buried, come with me. Back in the day, that wasn't considered to be such a bad idea, to follow such a person in the middle of nowhere. So Rabbi Bar Chana went with him, And it says he saw there was a crevice in the ground and there was smoke rising. And the guide said, put your ear to the ground. And so he did. And he heard them saying, and this is where it comes from, Moshe emes v'taraso emes. In other words, they ultimately were looking to undermine the basic tenet of Moshe emes v'taraso emes. And therefore part of what they need to do to rectify that on an ongoing basis is to claim and exclaim Moshe emes v'taraso emes. Now, the Gemara says that the guide told Rabbi Bar Chana that this is something that they say every month. And to that, the Rashbam adds, on Rosh Chodesh. So on Rosh Chodesh, when everyone else is davening Musaf, they're saying Moshe Emes v'Tarasa Emes. And the question is, if we may ask, my Inyan Moshe Emes for Korach, it's on Rosh Chodesh. So how does it come to be appropriate that it's once a month and specifically on Rosh Chodesh? Says Avni Nezer of Sokachov, there's 12 months in the year, and those 12 months correspond to the 12 tribes of Israel. And each month corresponds to a different tribe, and Rosh Chodesh represents the Yom Tov of that Shevet. And so it's very interesting, because part of what Korach needs to admit is not only Moshe Emes v'Tarasa Emes, but he needs to admit that he was wrong to try and invalidate each one of the 12 Shvatim. Every Rosh Chodesh, where another Shevet, that they attain primacy, and that is their month, Korach says again, Moshe Emes means I made a mistake not only about Moshe, but about this Shevet that I was looking to disown. And this Shevet I was looking to disown. An entirely new perspective on the timing of what it means. Ultimately, the message from Parshas Korach is that Yisrael is comprised of all of the Jewish people and Shevet Levi amongst them. But so this is a new insight, really, a bit of a deeper understanding as to what exactly Korach means when he says we want the Avodah and how we understood things had changed and for whom had they changed. Now, as it turns out, the Korach's men, they took the test, but they failed. And the fallout is to be found in Perek Yud Zayin. It's very interesting to note that even after they'd all died and some had been swallowed up and some of them had been burnt, there wasn't an aftermath. And the pasuk states, "Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, emor el Elozer ben Aaron haKohen, tell Elozer, v'yareimus hamachtos b'bein hasreifa, they've all been burnt, the fire came out, consumed them all, take the machtos, take the fire pans on which they had the ketores, b'bein hasreifa, from amongst the conflagration, v'esa'es rehala, get rid of the fire, and it's machtos achatoyim ha'elib, and afshosam v'asu osam riku'ei fachim tzipui la'mizbeach." And in fact, those copper pans are to become a coating, a layer around the Mizbeach. It will be coated with the copper from those fire pans. It's very interesting to note that the one who was told to do this is Elazar, the son of Aaron. We haven't heard much from him in Parshas Korach. The prime protagonist was really Aaron himself. Aaron is there, and no one is speaking to him. The one to collect the machtos is Elazar. What is the meaning behind this? There's a fascinating comment of the Meiri that relates to a famous episode in Maseches Brachos in the fourth perek, which talks about the altercation between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Gamliel was the Nasi. Rabbi Yoshua had a number of issues that he differed with on Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Gamliel dealt in a very heavy-handed manner with Rabbi Yoshua. They had a difference in terms of what day Yom Kippur would fall, and he told Rabbi Yoshua to come to him with his wallet and with his walking stick on the day that Yom Kippur fell, according to his cheshbon. And the question as to Tefillas Arvis, is it Rishus, is it Chova? And they had a difference of opinion. And Rabbi Gamliel told Rabbi Yeshua to stand up, and he left him standing the whole day. And people were very concerned about all of this. They felt it was too much. Just to get a bit of perspective, by the way, as ultimately Rabbi Gamliel was deposed. They deposed Rabbi Gamliel. But why did he act that way? So the Mefarshim explain that to really understand any episode, you need to appreciate the context. We are dealing with the Jewish people, the Chachamim, as they are in Yavneh. The Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed. The center of Torah has moved from Yerushalayim to Yavneh. And moreover, everything that represented the Jewish establishment and infrastructure had gone up in flames. The center for the Jewish people was the Beis HaMikdash. It no longer exists. All that exists is the Beis Din. That's all you have. And therefore, in a sense, what Rabbi Gamliel needs to do is to assert the stability of the continuation of the Jewish people through Torah alone. And therefore, this is not a time to be reticent, because everything else has vanished, and this is all that's left. And if it takes a mild or timid form, then that's in danger of being dissolving as well. And therefore, Rabbi Gamliel makes a decision that for the benefit of a sense that Judaism continues, Torah continues, the Nesius is still here, and it's a force that should not be trifled with. And thus he acts in this very harsh way, in this very stern way with Rabbi Yeshua. And the way you can see it, as Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch in the Shirei Das explains, and it's probably the most important part of the story, for after Rabbi Gamliel was deposed, the Gemara says something amazing. The Af Rabbi Gamliel lo mona atzmo mi beis hamedrash afilu shah achas. Rabbi Gamliel did not leave the Beis HaMedrash, did not refrain himself from the Beis HaMedrash, even for 1 hour. Even though it looked like a very different Beis HaMedrash for him, because he was very selective in terms of who he would let in. Policy changed. Koldich ben Yesev v'yechol. Anyone who wants can come in and learn. And the place was mobbed. And Rabbi Gamliel was there. Says the Tel Zerav, if we imagine there was any aspect of draconian or personal imposition here, then when Rabbi Gamliel had been deposed, the last place you would see him is in the Beis HaMedrash with everybody else, in bench number 640. He'd probably start his own shul. And therefore, the Nesius, the real Nesius, continues. No. Here you see the equanimity and the Leshem Shamayim of Rabbi Gamliel. Where if I'm the Nasi, I act the way I feel the Nasi needs to. And if I'm not the Nasi, so I go to learn in the same Beis HaMedrash that booted me out. It's arguably the most important part of the story to get a sense of the measure of people that we're talking about. What's interesting is, when they did depose Rabbi Gamliel, because ultimately they felt that even for the best of reasons, that is not the way the Nesius can be maintained or operated. So then the question is, so who's going to be the Nasi? And there were a number of people that were considered and were dismissed as options. And one of them was Rabbi Yeshua. After all, Rabbi Yeshua, he is an equal in Torah to Rabbi Gamliel. And he hasn't done anything wrong. Says the Gemara, shall we appoint Rabbi Yeshua? We can't. Baal Maisahu. He was the one involved in the episode. And what that means to say is, that is insult to injury for Rabbi Gamliel. You kick him out, and not the one over whom he was deposed takes his place. That's too much. That's not nice. Ad kedei kach. It's also not nice not to be the Nasi. But it's more not nice for Rabbi Gamliel to experience that. So they went for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was a young man at the time, but then he assumed his older appearance, Hariani Kevin Shivim Shana, as we know from Seder night. So here's an interesting concept. Courtesy, but not just the veneer of courtesy, consideration, even for the wrong party. But the one that they were contesting, they're the ones to deal with the situation afterwards, that's too much. Says the Meiri in his Perush to Maseches Brachos Daf Kavches, there is precedent for this idea in the Torah. Korach, when he came up against Moshe Rabbeinu and specifically against Aaron, the Aaron Mahu Kisalinu Alav, and he lost, and there's just debris lying all over the place. Someone's got to pick up the pieces. And who was chosen? Says the Pasuk, tell Elozer to do it. Not Aaron. For Aaron to go and pick up the pans from amongst all the corpses, that's too much. That's insult to injury. And this is the source in the Torah for the way they acted at the time of Rabban Gamliel. And it's a tremendous chiddush, I think, for a number of reasons. That is to say, what's identified as the root is a more extreme consideration than in Rabbi Yeshua. In the case of Rabban Gamliel is yet alive. He's there in the Beis HaMedrash. All these people are dead. So it's a posthumous consideration. And moreover, their crime, one could say, is somewhat more grievous than Rabban Gamliel's. Rabban Gamliel was somewhat too heavy-handed with the Nesias. That's one thing. To contest the authenticity of the Torah Min HaShamayim and Moshe Rabbeinu as a Navi, that's altogether something else. That such a person should be shown consideration in their defeat, I think we learn more from the case that teaches than we do from the case that was learnt. It's fascinating, though, that at the end of the day, these fire pans were used to coat the Mizbeach. After all, there is a sense, generally speaking, that an object of an Aveira does not become turned into a mitzvah. I mean, there's plenty of other fire pans to use if you need to get copper from there. And from all the places, the Torah says, take those fire pans, they did something wrong with them, and you need to do something right with them, and attach it to the base HaMikdash, ultimately. But these are tainted, these fire pans. They have been instruments of a terrible wrongdoing. They don't seem to be eligible to be attached to the Mizbeach. So why is that appropriate? It's interesting to note that Ketores is never offered using anything other than gold. It's offered on a Mizbeach of gold, and the Machta that's used on a daily basis is also of gold. And here, somehow, there's been a departure, and the machtos are of Nechoshes. So what are we to make of that? I mean, there's many unusual aspects of this story, but what is the significance of this one? The Shem Yishmuel explains, copper, Nechoshes, as a concept, has a certain temperament associated with it. Namely, that of Azus, of boldness. We find that Azus Metzach, though someone who is brazen, is referred to as having a copper forehead. The Metzach Nechusha, Metzach Nechusha. And indeed, in a somewhat milder sense, anyone who's determined is called Nachush, Nechishut, Nachush Bedato. And what we see really is, when it comes to this middah of boldness, is that it can be a great asset for Torah living, but it can also be a terribly destructive thing. And we find this is contrasted between two Mishnayos that are back-to-back again in Pirkei Avos. The first Mishnah tells you, Hevei Oz Kanomer. Hevei Oz Kanomer, be bold as a leopard. It sounds like it's a positive value. The very next Pasuk says, Oz Panim LeGehenim. If you're bold, you're on the way out. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, well, what is it? Is it good? Is it bad? You just told me to be bold as a leopard, and then you told me I'll be in trouble. I mean, it's a good thing I read the second Mishnah. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, the difference between them is, the first Mishnah never told you to be an Oz Panim. It never told you to act in a brazen way that's overtly flamboyantly scornful of things. It said you need to be us, you need to be bold, and so you do. You need to be determined, absolutely. If you're not determined, you'll turn back at any obstacle. You need to be bold. You need to be determined. But not asponim. Asponim means that you're making
a celebration out of your boldness, and that becomes the primary issue itself, such a person is headed in a bad direction. Be as kanome, but as panim, legehin. So the midah of nechoshes, the midah of metzach nechusha, the double-edged sword. It can be a driving force in Torah, or it can be a destructive force if it gets out of hand. We mentioned before that Yaakov asked, he requested, delete me from the record. I don't wish to be involved, I don't wish to be mentioned. Vayikach Korach, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehas, Ben Levi, that's it. Adkan, not Ben Yaakov. Don't associate me with Korach. What is the meaning of this? What is the meaning of his move towards disassociation? Says the Shemishmur, the Medrash tells us in Shemos Rabbah that the three metals, the classic three, they always go together, Zahav and Chesed and Nechoshes, they correspond to the personalities of Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Nechoshes is Yaakov. Yaakov is represented by the determination against all odds. He's with Lavan, and Lavan's tricking him, and he keeps going, and he adapts, and he overcomes, and he improvises, and he's Az Kanomer. He is Nechoshes. Korach's men defiled the Midah of Nechoshes, because they took the concept of boldness and they turned it into brazenness. They took the concept of determination and they turned it into deconstruction, whereby they felt that they could go wherever they wanted, do whatever they felt was due to them, and that's a violation of Nechoshes. For their part, they perhaps presented themselves as heirs to the legacy of Yaakov. You see? Yaakov, Nechoshes, and so are we. Yaakov says, I'm not connected with them. That's not my midah. That's an abuse of my midah. Leave me out. Yaakov is Azkanomer. This was Azponim. However, the Torah recognizes there was a kernel of true idealism within Korach's men. They just took it too far. But carefully controlled, it's actually a concept and a force that the Jewish people need. And therefore, the fire pans were made of Nechoshes, which is the testing metal for the purity of intent of Korach's men. And they lost because they took it too far. They took the fire pans and they put too much fire. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't throw away those fire pans. Don't throw away that Nechoshes. Get rid of the fire, take the Nechoshes and put it on the Mizbeach. Because for Avodas Hashem, you need a little Nechoshes. You need to be Nechush B'datcha. So this is a very great insight, because as we consider Korach and his men, it's somewhat more complex than saying they did the wrong thing, they wanted the wrong thing, they wanted the right thing, but they went about it in the wrong way. And the question is there anything to learn from them? The answer is plenty. Leave the fire out, but everyone could do with a bit of that Nechoshes, each one as they persevere in their determined and bold way of going about Avodas Hashem under all circumstances and surmounting any obstacles they may encounter. We'll leave it over there for today.